Today I have an extra special guest coming on the show, calling all the way from Banana Land, the associate head coach and director of baseball operations of the world-renowned comical baseball team, the Savannah Bananas. Welcome to the show, Adam Varant. Mr. Varo, thanks so much for coming on the show today. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Gabriel. I'm fired up to be talking with you this morning.
Great. Could you tell me and my listeners a little about yourself?
Yeah, so I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and a long ways away. Some of your listeners probably have never been to Omaha, Nebraska. I highly encourage it. But grew up there, played baseball, and learned to love the game at the College World Series, where the NCAA plays their championship every year. And then from there, I made my way to play college baseball in Fort Scott, Kansas, and then finished up at George Mason University. And from there, I went to law school and practiced law for about 10 years in the great state of New York. Learned that it just wasn't what fired me up or gave me energy. And so I got back into baseball because it's all about teaching. It's all about relationships. And I had a real, real strong interest in that. And baseball has really, really led me to some phenomenal places and some phenomenal experiences, ultimately culminating with me being involved with the Bananas in present day. And we just started our 2024 tour last weekend, and now I'm talking with you, and I couldn't be happier.
When did you start getting into baseball? Like, where did you start from, childhood?
Yeah, I remember playing t-ball when I was like 6 years old in our neighborhood in Papillion, Nebraska, where I grew up. And my earliest memory of baseball is hitting a baseball, running to first base, my shoe falling off because they weren't tied. Instead of continuing on to first base, I turned around, went back, put my shoe on, tied it nicely, and then they just tagged me out. And that's my earliest memory of baseball.
Do you remember what team you were on?
I do. It was the Dodgers. It was in the Little League program. And the reason I remember that is we got a trophy for first place, which it's not about the trophies, but I still have that trophy somewhere at my mother's house in Omaha. And whenever I go back for holidays, I dig through all my memorabilia from my childhood, and that trophy's in there, and it says Dodgers on it. So that's the only way I know.
So how did you actually go from law to being a coach for the Savannah Bananas? Like,
yeah, that's a great question. When I was in college, my dream was to be in the major leagues. And so I put a lot of time and effort into that. And I had an injury. I don't know if I was eventually good enough to be in the major leagues. I was pretty good, but I had an injury that made life come at me very, very quickly. So I wanted to stay in the game of baseball in some way. And when I'm a little bit older than you, I'm a lot older than you, but when I was growing up, there was this movie that Tom Cruise was in called Jerry Maguire. And Jerry Maguire, if you haven't seen it, it's a great movie, but he's a sports agent. And they really glamorized the sports agency business. So I said, hey, you know what? I can still stay in sports and use kind of my intellect by going to law school and becoming a sports agent. Mm. Well, I quickly realized I didn't want to become a sports agent because I had an opportunity to speak with a lot of them. And I was already, 2 years into law school. So I went into law, and while I really love helping people, and that was kind of my initial goal of going to law school as well as becoming a sports agent, I quickly realized it just wasn't for me. There's nothing wrong with the profession. It's a tough profession, but it just wasn't for me. So after about 10 years of really kind of struggling with, do I love this? Do I not? I'm not really feeling it. I decided to leave, and that was a really, really tough decision because I racked up over $200,000 in law school loans. And, it's a big, big change in pace, what to do next. And so, speaking with my father and my mother and some other friends, we identified that, getting into teaching and coaching might be right up my alley. And so I kind of reverted to what I knew the best, which was baseball, and got into coaching baseball in New York City And I absolutely loved it. I loved working with the little kids. I loved helping kids kind of help identify their goals and achieve their dreams. And it really, really stuck for me. And I've loved every moment from making that transition. And I'm really glad I did make the transition. It was a big leap of faith to leave being a lawyer from making, you know, a good paycheck and having some stability there to going to the very unstable world of coaching youth baseball. But here I am, and I think I'm one of the success stories of leaving the law and finding another passion of something I really love. So happy I did it.
I was going to say it eventually paid off.
Well, you know, it paid off in the sense that I wake up every single day and I'm truly happy and energized to go to work. And that also happened when I was just coaching youth baseball, but certainly now with the Bananas. So, you know, what I learned was money's not everything. Happiness is, your health is, and being able to really, truly enjoy and dive into whatever it is you're doing. And for me, it's coaching baseball.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever want to coach for the MLB?
Of course. You know, I think growing up, Major League Baseball was it. That was the top of the mountain. And, you know, there's a lot of glamour and fame that comes with coaching Major League Baseball. So certainly I'd love to coach in the major leagues. That was before the Bananas even existed. And now that the Bananas are here and also the Party Animals and all the other teams under the Fans First umbrella, there's no better place for me than coaching with the Bananas, because we're developing a whole new game of banana ball, which we can get to. I get to use my law skills from a operations and coordination standpoint. And I love comedy and I love laughing and I love being funny. And that is a huge, huge piece of what makes the Bananas go.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get looped into the Bananas?
Yeah, good question. So there's a guy, my best friend named Nate Fish. He gave me my first job in New York City in the baseball industry. And he was already deep into baseball. He was coaching in the Cape Cod League. He was coaching with Team Israel. And so he was very well entrenched in the baseball world with his connections. And so I went to visit him while he was coaching in the Cape Cod League for the Whitey Red Sox. And at that time, he was coaching with a guy named Tyler Gillum. And I got to know Tyler up there. And Tyler, during breakfast one day, said, "Hey, you know what? I'm thinking about going to coach for the Bananas. Have you seen this thing?" And right at that time is when a very famous clip came out of the Savannah Bananas game and their first base coach. And he was dancing and he was awesome. And that really stuck out in my head and kind of filed that away. And then 2 years later, Tyler Gillum was coaching the summer league team for the Savannah Bananas. And he called Nate and said, "Hey, they're creating this new thing called Banana Ball. And I can't coach it because I'm coaching in junior college right now. But would you be able to coach it?" Nate said yes. And he brought me along to help him for the One City World Tour. And when I stepped foot in Savannah, I was absolutely hooked. Once I met Jesse Cole and Emily Cole and Jared Orton and Barry Aldridge and everybody, that kind of the brain trust that makes the Bananas go. And I stuck along, and I've been here for 4 years now. Nate went on to coach in the Dodgers organization and now is international director with Team Israel baseball. And so, you know, that's kind of how I got involved in the Bananas. It's, you know, I knew somebody who had an in, and then I got in and I made the best of it.
So you were talking about how you're starting to like improve the rules of banana ball. Could you actually talk about what the rules of banana ball are?
Yeah. So a little bit of history. The Savannah Bananas started out as a college summer team in the Coastal Plains League, and college summer teams only play from like the end of May to the beginning of August. So it's a very short window. And so, Jesse Cole and his owners and his staff were like, "What can I do? What can we do to play baseball year round?" And so the college kids were in college, so they can't play year round. So they started kind of kicking around different ideas to create a very high impact, high intensity, fast, fun game. And so they started messing around with the rules. And so, as you know, in traditional baseball, there's no time clock. And so one thing that Jesse identified is, hey, games are getting too long. And that's not fun for anybody, and nobody's staying till the end. So they sat down and they started coming up with all of the rules, if they could start from scratch, that they would keep and get rid of to create the best fan experience and the most entertaining fan experience for Savannah Banana fans. And so they did that. And so it's been a work in progress. I came in on year three when they were kind of coming up with those rules. But since I've been here, we've developed two new rules. And I'll go through the rules really quick for you. But the first rule of Banana Ball is every inning counts. And what we mean by that, in traditional baseball, all nine innings count in baseball. So if you score 10 runs throughout those nine innings, the score is 10. And if the other team only scores 5 through those nine innings, it's 10-5. But in Banana Ball, every inning is like an individual game. So if the party animals, usually our visiting team that we play, if they score 3 runs in the top of the first and the Bananas only score 1, the score is only 1-0 going into the second inning. And so those, you can win 1 point every single inning until the final inning, which is usually the ninth inning, where every run counts as a point. And the reason we developed that rule a couple years ago, once we saw that we don't want games to get out of hand. We want games to always be exciting all the way up until the very end, because it's all about the fan experience. It's all about excitement. So that first rule, every inning counts, is really fantastic. And what it does is it causes lots of games to end 1-0 or 2-0. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Second rule, 2-hour time limit. Like I mentioned, the clock starts at the first pitch and it ends when the clock runs out, but we don't play more than 9 innings unless there's a tie. So the cool thing is we played every game over the past last tour and this tour under 2 hours, which is really, really incredible. Even including all of the fan entertainment and the in-game promotions that we do. So 2-hour time limit, fans can sit there and they're like, you know what? I'm not going to have to be here for 4 hours because this game's going to drag out with all the pitching changes and things. So 2-hour time limit. Third rule is no stepping out. We don't want batters stepping out and kind of dragging, slowing the game down by adjusting their batting gloves and all those things. So if you step out, it's a strike. All of our guys now know they don't step out of the box. It does speed up the game a little bit. And so, you know, the whole thing is to try to create a fast, engaging sport. And so that's why we have no stepping out. Mm-hmm. Rule number 4, no bunting. Really funny rule. If you bunt in Banana Ball, not only are you out, you are ejected from the game. And I don't know who came up with this rule, but whoever did, they wanted to see offense. So they wanted to see batters swing the bat. I do love bunting. I do understand that it's not in Banana Ball. It's not for Banana Ball. But if you bunt, you get ejected from the game. And funny story about this rule is every year when the Coastal Plains team was playing, the College Summer League team was playing, the pro team would play the summer team. And Tyler was coaching the summer team. I was coaching the pro team. And one of his batters bunted during opening day in front of his family and got just – unbelievably ejected. It was amazing. No bunting in Banana Ball. Fifth rule, batters, you can steal first base. I don't know why Major League Baseball doesn't have this rule, but it's an amazing rule. So if a batter's in the box and on a pitch, if the ball gets away from the catcher, the batter can take off and steal first base. It turns into a force out at first base. We don't want any collisions. We don't want people sliding or anything like that. But it just means that pitcher's got to be a little bit more careful with making a ball, throwing a pitch that a catcher can catch. Also, catchers need to make sure that they can corral the ball. So stealing first base is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Number 6, this is an interesting rule. No walks are allowed. They in fact turn into what's called a sprint. So on ball 4 in Major League Baseball or all other baseball, batters, what do? They throw their bat to the side, they take their batting gloves off, they take their armor off, and then they walk to first base. It's literally the most unathletic thing that any sport has in their rules. So we turned that into a sprint. When ball four is counted, the batter takes off running. The defense must throw the ball around to every single ball player on the field. The pitcher catcher already touched it, so they don't need to touch it again. But that ball needs to be go around to every fielder on the field before it's live, okay? Once it's live, now the runner is at risk of being tagged out. Usually, if it's a fast runner, they can get to second base, so a walk turns into a double. If the defense throws a ball away, it will probably turn into a triple, or it may turn into an inside the park home run. And so there's a saying that walks kill in baseball. Well, in banana ball, they are very, very fatal, because if you have a runner on first or second base and every inning counts, if you walk a batter and it's 0-0, the home team maybe walks you off of that inning. So ball four sprint's pretty cool. Seventh rule, if there's a tie at the end of nine innings or at the end of the regulation of 2 hours, we go into showdowns, similar to penalty kicks. So the first, there's three levels of showdowns, three rounds of showdowns. The first round is one batter, catcher, and one defensive player versus one versus a pitcher. Okay, the batter must get an inside the park home run in order to score a point from their team. If they strike out or ground out and get tagged out around the bases, they're out. If they hit a home run out of the ballpark, doesn't matter if you're on the visiting or away or home team, the game is automatically over. It's the ultimate walk-off. So that's the first round. The second round, you remove the defensive player. The third round, you load the bases, and you do that until you have a win. So it's pretty exciting. Eighth rule, no mound visits. No big deal. We just do that to speed up the game, so there's no calling timeout, letting pitchers warm up. Ninth rule, the ninth rule is my favorite rule of them all. If a fan catches a foul ball, it's an out. In Major League Baseball, if you catch a ball, it's awesome. You get to take it with you. But in banana ball, if you catch a ball cleanly, the batter is out. And it happens as we play in these bigger stadiums. It's happening 1 to 3 times a weekend. It's really, really amazing when it happens. When it does, we go get that fan. We bring him on the field. We announce him to the crowd. If a fan caught a bananas ball, they get booed. If a fan caught a party animals ball, they get cheered. It's pretty awesome. 10th rule, which is a new rule we introduced last year, is a fan challenge. If a fan wants to challenge a call on the field, they get to do that one time during the game. We pick a fan to do that challenge, and they don't have to, but they usually do. They get a popper where they can pop off of confetti cannon and challenge any play. And then the replay team has 1 minute to come up with a, confirm or overturn it. And then the last rule, a brand new rule this year as well. It's called the Golden Batter Rule. And the Golden Batter Rule is one time a game at any point in a game, a team can send any batter to the plate to hit. Okay. So let me set this up for you. Last year in the World Baseball Classic, Shohei Ohtani was facing Mike Trout, I think in the championship. And it was one of the most exciting things to see literally the best pitcher in all of baseball face arguably one of the best hitters in all of baseball. And that was really cool. So we created a rule to try to emulate that. So, for instance, in the bottom of the ninth, if the Bananas are losing 2-1, and there's a runner on third base and the 10th batter is up to bat because we use 10 batters, we can literally send any batter we want to the plate one time. So we can send our 3-hole, 4-hole hitter up to the plate to hit, and it creates a little bit more excitement for the fans. So those are the rules. I know it was long. I wanted to explain them a little bit, but do you have any questions over those rules, or you want me to clarify any of them?
I don't have any questions, but it seems like such a fun game to play. I mean, I would love to be on there playing this.
what we hear from youth baseball coaches all the way up to college coaches is they implement these rules into their scrimmages to kind of energize the game and make them a little bit more fun. And when we started hearing that University of Texas or Clemson University was playing banana ball during their fall training, we were blown away, because we realized that, hey, baseball players love playing the game of baseball, but you know what? They also like having fun. So how can we keep a lot of the elements of traditional baseball, but really energize it so it's a little bit more fast-paced, it's a little bit more engaging? And so you're exactly right, Gabriel. I would have loved to play banana ball when I was a kid. So I'm really fortunate that I'm able to kind of help carve out the rules for future generations to really enjoy this game.
What's it like being out there, like on the floor of the game, just seeing everybody, all the smiles on the fans' faces?
Man, it's truly incredible. You nailed it about the smiles on the fans' faces. I got to go back. I haven't mentioned this, but the name of our company is Fans First Entertainment. And every decision that we make here is we ask a question. Is this good for the fans? Is this the best experience for the fans? So being on the field, we know that we have the most exciting brand of baseball out there. We know we have the most exciting brand of on-field entertainment. And we also know that we do not exist without the fans. So breaking down the barrier between the fans and the players is critical to us. And so we are able to create these really unforgettable moments for folks just by saying hi, by going into the crowd during games and signing autographs, by meeting them before the game and signing autographs, or even after the game at our plaza party. And so it's one of the reasons why I truly love this job is people are showing up to have a good time. And at the end of the day, they don't care if the bananas win or the party animals win or the firefighters win or the visitors win. They don't care about that. They care about having a good time. And so our job, first and foremost, is by creating the greatest fan experience out there. And I think we do a pretty good job of it. At the end of the day, we count our wins and losses by how many smiling faces we see. And we have a lot of them. And it's pretty special to be out on that field.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the first times one of the most recent times I saw the Savannah Bananas, I saw Dakota Stilts All Britain. I was just wondering, how did that come to be, like a person on stilts playing baseball?
You know, one of my biggest failures or potential failures at the Bananas was me and my coaches almost cut Dakota because we didn't think that there was a place for a player on stilts in banana ball. And that was, I know it's crazy. It was well before we even realized what we were trying to do. And Dakota came to that first tryout back in 2021. And I remember vividly him coming up to me during this like chaotic tryout. And he said, "Hey coach, I have stilts and I can ride a unicycle and hit on a unicycle." I was like, "All right, cool. Go get them and let's see." And I, you know, I didn't know where it was going to go. And I'll never forget when he came walking onto the field on stilts, the entire tryout and everybody in attendance just stopped and stared. You could have heard a pin drop. And everybody was blown away at this guy walking on stilts because he's 10 feet, 11 feet tall up there. And then he picks up a bat and gets in the batting cage and starts swinging and hitting baseballs. We were blown away. And, you know, we determined that, hey, you know what? We need to have him on the team, but he can't play first base full time. We need an actual first baseman who can move around and actually pick up the ball. So we created a roster spot for him that we have now developed into what's called entertainment players. And entertainment players are critical to the success of our shows because they kind of break up the monotony of what normal baseball looks like. And so, you know, we'll call in stilts to finish out the inning or come on up to bat or even play first base, as well as Matt Wolf, our rodeo clown, who's truly one of the most incredible, talented baseball players I've ever seen on the field. Having stilts around and these entertainment players, it's been amazing. And, you know, it's really crazy coaching Dakota Stilts because he's a pitcher and I'm kind of taking over the pitching staff this year. I've never been on stilts in my life. If I did, I'd fall down and I'd break a bone in my body, no doubt. So trying to give Stilts pitching advice is tough, but he's probably the most popular character that we have in Banana Land. And whenever he gets announced, you'll see everybody pull out their phone and hold it up and start videoing, and they're just in awe. You know, win, lose, or draw, they just want to be there, see Stilts. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people watch Savannah, the Savannah Bananas. They see them dancing. Do you coach the dancing, so to say?
So I don't coach the dancing. We have a great entertainment team led by Zach Ferrangelo. He's our director of entertainment, and he has a whole staff underneath of him. Avery Hughes, Brenna, all these folks underneath of him who are true entertainers, true dancers, as well as Maceo Harrison. So Maceo is our breakdancing first base coach. The entertainment team and Maceo teach all of the dances to our players and make sure they're up to standards. And our job is just to make sure that we get the right guys in here who will kind of lean into the entertainment and not be afraid of dancing. That's our job as coaches. But we have a full entertainment team that takes care of all of those things. They do such a great, great job. This year, I think we've had to learn about 5 or 6 different dances. I can't even keep them straight. But I know the fans like them. I know they play really, really well on social media. And quite frankly, they're a lot of fun to do. It kind of breaks up the monotony of just go, go, go on the banana ball front to when you dance. I mean, if you're a great dancer or not, it's a lot of fun to do it when everybody else is doing it as well. So I don't teach any of the dances. You don't want that from me.
So you were talking about the party animals and the firefighters before. How are those two teams created?
Yeah, it's a great question. So when we hold tryouts, we are always trying to identify players who are the most entertaining players on the planet. And we find a lot of them. And when we find them, we kind of figure out, hey, where do they best fit? Where are they kind of more of a crazy kind of party animal type? Are they kind of more of a all-American, you know, banana ball hero or banana type? Do they fit into that firefighters brand? And so unequivocally, every single player, no matter where they're assigned, they need to be able to do things on a baseball field that nobody else can do. They have to be able to play at a very, very high level. They have to be a very good person, and they have to really care about fans and connecting with fans. And so those four things, every single player, no matter what team they're on, must have. They have to check those boxes. Then after that, we look at, hey, where do they best fit? If we have a guy who's huge and he has tons of tattoos and he's got huge, amazing facial hair, you know, that's kind of a typecast for the party animals, and we may assign him over there. You know, at the end of the day, it's less science, less art, and more about needs of the teams. And so if a team needs more pitching, or if a team needs more hitters, we'll kind of do our best job to make those teams as even as possible, because we don't want teams blowing the other teams out. But there are some people who, hey, that guy's a party animal. Hey, that guy's a banana. That guy's a firefighter. And we do our best to try to get it right. That's how we do it.
Do the teams practice and rehearse together for playing baseball and dancing, or do they rehearse and practice separately?
Both. So we try to do as much together as groups as we can. The reason we do that is we want unity amongst all of the teams, because as you can imagine, we are still playing a very competitive sport. All of these players are highly competitive individuals. And the last thing we want is for them to not like each other because they don't know each other. And then banana ball just becomes this overly competitive thing where guys are not doing trick plays and they're not really being fans first and they're not leaning into the entertainment. So we try to keep everybody together as much as possible. We do have, during the season, every week, teams will have one individual team practice. That way they can work on individual team things. But generally, when we do game review or we have meetings, it's everybody together, just so everybody's in alignment. And we travel together. We stay in the same hotels. We eat together. A lot of times we're in the same locker rooms because as we travel around to these Major League Baseball or minor league baseball stadiums, the home teams, maybe just on the road, but their stuff is still in their home locker room. So a lot of times we're all in the same locker room. So, if we don't like each other and we have dissension, that's not really great. So we keep them together as much as we can, but still give them the time to be able to work together and kind of come up with a, you know, a strategy on how they're going to attack the team, you know, the following weekend.
When someone tries out for the team, do you keep in mind if they can dance or if they can't dance, or do you just, do you take them for their skills in baseball and then teach them how to dance?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been asked that question about 1,000 times, and you first have to be a very, very good baseball player, because if you can't play baseball, but you can only dance, well, then former Major League Baseball players who come to watch our games are not going to be too impressed with the level of play. So they have to be able to play baseball, but then they also have to have a personality, and they have to be willing to entertain and go heads first into this dancing. So if we have a player who's really, really good, we can teach them how to dance as long as we identify that, hey, you know what, they want to be a part of this, and they just don't want to try to, you know, play in front of sold out crowds. So we can teach anybody how to dance. Now, some, which we find, some players have both right off the bat. The one thing we've learned about baseball players is they're kind of goofy. And so if they're good at baseball, they're probably already kind of doing some crazy dancing or some crazy antics on the sidelines as it is. So, but yeah, we teach them. And if they're just a good dancer, that doesn't mean that they're a good fit for a baseball team. Because again, they have to play at a very high level.
Mm-hmm. How much do you guys actually rehearse the dances versus practicing baseball?
Well, we rehearse the dances as much as we possibly have to make sure that every single player is doing them correctly and in sync. And so when we just learned a new finale dance, that the winning team will do this kind of send-off dance. And I think that we rehearsed it 25, 30 times.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's still a show and it still has to look good. And so if a fan is really into dancing and they come watch our one of our games and we do that finale and the dancing's not good, they're not going to be impressed. But if it is slightly good or very good, they're going to be blown away. And so we have to get it right. But we do practice. Our practices look very, very similar to a traditional baseball practice with a few twists. You know, we take ground balls and pitchers throw bullpens and the hitters hit. But we also practice trick plays quite a bit. And so last year on the tour, we had over 600 trick plays. It was absolutely incredible. It's very similar to the amazing, you know, slam dunks or the amazing passes in basketball that you see. So I would say 70% of our practice is traditional baseball things. 30% is banana ball specific things from a trick play standpoint or things of that nature. And then the rehearsals of the dance will always happen separate from practice. Mm-hmm. So, but we do a little bit of rehearsal every single day of the week.
So I don't know if my listeners out there actually know this, but the Savannah Bananas actually have their own cheerleading team called the Savannah Nanas. How did they like come to be?
You know, Jesse Cole is always looking for new ways to bring entertainment to the field. And, you know, he has a saying that whatever is normal, do the complete opposite. So in all of sports, you have cheerleaders, young cheerleaders on the sidelines. And he's like, you know what, that's already been done. So how can we do it similarly, but different? And so he's like, hey, let's have a 60 and over dance team. Why not do that? He also has the Mananas, Bad Bod cheerleading team as well. And so, you know, it's entertaining. You'll never go to any sporting event and see a 60 and over cheerleading team, nor a Dad Bod cheerleading team. And they're amazing. They're hilarious. And so it's very entertaining to see. Unfortunately, the Banana Nanas do not travel with us all the time. And that is usually what we hear at the end of games when we're meeting fans is, where are the Nanas at? And, you know, we're going to try to get them in the mix a lot more. But at Savannah, at our games in Savannah, the Nanas that are at all of our games, they're awesome to watch. They're very serious and professional about their dance routines. But yeah, Jesse was looking for new and inspiring ways to create some entertainment, and he hit a home run with the Nanas, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So have any of the players actually gone on to the MLB?
Yeah. So when the Savannah Bananas were a college summer team, Tyler Gillum did a great job of recruiting very high-level baseball players through his connections in college baseball. And so I don't have the stats here in front of me, but I believe that the Savannah Bananas college team has produced 5 Major League Baseball players.
Wow.
It could be more. But every year, a lot of them were getting drafted and this of that nature. But the current team, the professional team, we have not had any players get elevated to the major leagues, but we have had a number of our current players get offered affiliate roles in different major league organizations, minor league teams, that they have turned down to stay with the Savannah Bananas, which is really, really cool. I do believe, and it may happen this year, that we will have somebody who is signed to go play for a major league organization out of our team. And that's just a testament to the level of players that we have and the level of baseball players that are the level of baseball that we are playing. But yeah, the summer league team has had a handful of guys make it to the major leagues, which is pretty cool for guys who dance during the game. But then they have what it takes to get to the major leagues, which is pretty cool.
Have any MLB players actually reached out to you guys?
Oh yeah. We've had a large number of major league players, former major league players play with us. Last year, we had Jake Peavy and Johnny Damon and Johnny Gomes play with us. We had Barry Zito and Zach Duke, play with us. This past weekend in Tampa, we had Nick Swisher from the New York Yankees play with us.
Wow.
And so we will, we do a pretty good job of allowing these former major league players who want to be a part of the show play with us. And so Hunter Pence played with us in California. Eric Burns, former major league player, used to coach the Bananas and then, you know, got some at bats with the Bananas. So we've had a lot of major league players play with us, but we've also had a lot of major league players come and sit in the dugout and just be blown away about what we're doing. For instance, Jose Trevino, the catcher for the New York Yankees, is a good friend of the Bananas. He was just down in Tampa playing in our dugout, was blown away. And so we've had a lot of Major League Baseball players give us the stamp of approval because they recognize how high of level of player of baseball that we are playing, but they also love how we are playing the game through entertainment, through keeping the game fun, by keeping it exciting. So, yeah, you know, luckily we've had the stamp of approval from folks who have played at the highest level. And we hope that's going to continue to all various cities throughout the tour this year.
So actually most recently, I just saw John Cena came to play with you guys. I was amazed by that.
My gosh, John Cena. Yeah. John Cena joined us last Saturday in Tampa. He made an appearance and, you know, that guy's larger than life, literally. And I'm still kind of in awe that we had the opportunity to meet him and get to know him a little bit and for him to put on the Bananas jersey and step up to the plate. He got called out on strikes. Unfortunately, he did charge the mound. And the pitcher ran off cause he didn't want to get body slammed, but, you know, he went down, elegantly by raising the pitcher's hand above his head as the champion. But that was a really, really special moment. And, you know, that's really cool about banana ball games is you never know, who might show up. And the fans do not know that John Cena, they didn't know that John Cena or Nick Swisher or any of these guys are showing up. It's really, really just kind of a special occasion, and it's a surprise for the fans. it was also a surprise for our players. Nobody knew that John Cena was coming. Nobody knew that Nick Swisher was coming. And so that's really, really cool of Jesse to kind of set those up and create those special moments for not just the players, but for the fans. But yeah, John Cena was very, very cool.
Mm. Well, since you have so many, I guess, high profile people coming into the banana games, and since everybody wants to see the Savannah Bananas, it's so hard to get the tickets. For the fans listening who may want to go to one of the games, how do you suggest going about to get the tickets?
Yeah, we're lucky enough to have such a high demand for our games. We have currently over 2 million people on our waiting list to get tickets. That's a lot. And so the way you go about getting tickets is we have a lottery system where you go on our website, you go on the ticket icon, and you just sign up for the lottery. Then what happens is we randomly select names out of that lottery for the opportunity to buy tickets. Okay. And a lot of folks do that. Those tickets, fortunately for us and unfortunately for the 2 million plus fans on the waiting list, they go very, very quickly. And so it's literally like winning a lottery. We want to create excitement in the process of being allowed to go to banana ball games. You know, you'll see lots of tickets on StubHub and some of these secondary ticket resellers. We never recommend buying those tickets. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're very, very expensive. If somebody wants to spend their money by buying a ticket on StubHub or one of those other ticket platforms, hey, we can't stop them, but we don't encourage it because we want fans to be able to come to a game that is appropriately priced. Our tickets are either $35 for Savannah, which includes all you can eat food in Savannah, or, you know, on the road at these stadiums, it's either $35 up to $65 for the major league stadiums. We try to keep it as affordable as possible. But yeah, fans will have to go through that ticket lottery system. Another way to do it is to join our K Club, which is our special guest, our membership warehouse. And so you can join the K Club and have an opportunity to get the first crack at tickets. But it's a very hard ticket. The Bananas is a very hard ticket to get. The other way to, get to know a player. The cool thing about our players is you can connect with them online and, you know, via Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, whatever it is. And a lot of times those players will give away their player tickets if they have them available. But the lottery system is the first and tried and true way to get our tickets for our games. And, you know, unfortunately, all of our games are sold out for this year already, which is kind of crazy. So, you know, you'll kind of have to wait for 2025, but get on that list right away. That way you have an opportunity to get them for next year.
Mm. And just to end off the show, would you have any advice for someone that maybe wants to go into the Savannah Bananas or the MLB or go pro for baseball?
Yeah, I mean, the advice that I have for anybody who wants to achieve the highest level of sport or anything is you have to really put forth the effort and do everything you can towards achieving that goal, whatever it is. And so if you want to become a member of the Savannah Bananas, well, you have to first figure out what a Savannah Banana player is and how they're different and what it takes to be a banana. And so one, like I mentioned, you got to play at a very high level, but you have to bring something to the field that nobody's ever seen. And so if you can do a backflip, cool. Try to catch a fly ball in center field while doing a backflip like our center fielder D.R. Meadows does. Or, you know, if you're a pitcher, try to figure out how to be the world's fastest pitcher, not on velocity, but the world's quickest pitcher. See if you can strike out a batter in 9 seconds or less. And so you have to really understand what the task is in order to achieve that goal. But if you want to accomplish anything, the one thing I've learned is you got to work harder than the next person. And no matter how hard you think you're working, there's somebody out there who is and who might be working harder than you, but you really just got to put your mind to it and you got to put forth the effort. That's all it takes. And so effort is the secret ingredient to every success. And so anybody can become it, but it's not going to happen by just sitting at home eating Pop-Tarts and playing video games. You got to get out there and do the work. So, you know, that's my advice. Put forth the effort and try to see yourself in your mind as that kind of ultimate goal, whatever it is. So if you want to be a Major League Baseball player, see yourself on that Major League Baseball field wearing that uniform and then go out there and achieve it. And so, you know, here's the deal. Somebody's got to be the next Major League Baseball player. Somebody has to be the next Savannah Banana. And why not you? And so go out there and make it happen if you really want to become it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Coach Varo, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Gabriel, thanks so much for having me. And don't hesitate to reach out. You know, if anybody wants to follow me on Instagrams and see any of our videos or any of the cool photos from behind the scenes, you can follow me at Coach_Viro. That's V-I-R-O. And, you know, feel free to DM me or reach out with any questions. The one thing about us is we want to connect and we want to be open to our fans. And so just like you, Gabriel, reaching out to me on Instagram, any of your listeners can, and we'll get back to you. And, you know, we hope to see you at a banana ball game down the road.
Oh, yeah, of course. And as always, this has been Gabriel at WDOT Radio. Until next time. Go Bananas!